Welcome back, one and all, to the best seat at the track. You already know it is the Front Stretch Podcast. You know what they say, once a Front Stretch Podcast host, always a Front Stretch Podcast host. Dustin Albino, JSki.com, and Front Stretch alum is going to be on with us today, and so is Drew Blickensderfer of Stuart Haas Racing. We got the Monster Mile to talk about. We got the track Too Tough to Tame to talk about. Lots to do, little time to do it. So let's go ahead and get this episode started.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing, boys.
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. Wow, Dusty, did you ever think you'd be back here? We're in a time machine. We went back a couple years, and it's like you never left.
Yeah, I guess we went back about 18 months. I'm happy to be back. I poured my heart and soul into this podcast for like 3.5 years, so I'm glad to see you taking over, and it's in good hands.
Yes, but unlike another one of your former co-hosts, you do not think every cup race should be 500 miles.
I don't. I do naturally like long races, but not that long every single week.
No, and you're not also taking this podcast from the toilet, so thank you.
Yeah, I will never do that ever with anything.
He was clothed. He was fully clothed. It was just a matter of having limited space, and that was the best private space.
That kind of concerns me because I'm staying at his house this week for Darlington with two other guys. So it's a little concerning.
You might just have to sleep on the bathroom floor. It's casual.
Let's hope not.
Let's talk about Dover this weekend. The reason I wanted to have you on, Dustin, is because we were sitting right next to each other in the media center all weekend long. And on Sunday, before the rains came, I would say that was a really solid crowd. I mean, we've been going to Dover for a long, long time. We usually go every single year, and we've seen the downtrend of the crowds, the downtrend of the racing. But I will say, and we'll get to the racing in a minute, the racing was great. The crowd on Sunday was great. Even the ones that came back on Monday for a Monday rain-delayed race at noon at Dover, I was surprised at how many people were there.
Yeah, for all of them to come back on Monday, that was good. Obviously, not all of them did, but for the amount that was there was, I think, good for really any rain, you know, delayed race to the next day. Yeah, the crowd Sunday, though, was jam-packed. I went out in the fan zone, and I think Dover did a really good job. I don't recall them doing this in years past where they have almost like – it was like almost like a carnival-type deal.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, they really did. Actually, on Saturday night, I went to Hibachi with one of my friends that I was staying with in Dover. And we were, you know, there's three of us, so we were put at another table with people, and they were doing some kind of explosion like stunt out there. So that was fun to kind of interact with them, and they told us about everything that was going on out there. And I think that, you know, in general helps bring in people, whether it be kids, adults, race fans, anybody.
Yeah. We've seen the positivity and the trending upwards in terms of attendance, television ratings, the on-track product with NASCAR. And I don't know why. I don't know if you get the same vibes. At least in recent years, Dover, to me, has kind of been like the redheaded stepchild of NASCAR tracks. It's like one race a year. It was independently owned. Not a lot of people showed up, fans or media. The racing was fine. It was kind of just a random race that didn't really have any bearing and any comparable to any track on the schedule. I don't know if that's necessarily changed in terms of the on-track performance, but I think when you look at the market being close to Philly, DC, Baltimore, and the on-track product, I firmly believe, and maybe I'm biased because it's my home track, but I think Dover deserves and has a place for the future on the Cup Series schedule. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you said, it's in the middle of all those markets, and you can throw in New York City because that's only a couple hours away too.
Sure.
That helps and hurts it, I think. It helps it because there's a lot of people. It hurts it because there's a lot of other stuff to do. There's a lot of other sports, you know, being ran. I think the Orioles were home this weekend, but regardless, you know, Dover, yeah, I mean, you've been going there far longer than I have, but this weekend I feel like, since I've been going there the last 8 years, I think that was by far the most people I've seen there, which is definitely a good thing. And it's kind of been an uptick, I think, in crowds, ratings all year long, really.
It has been. And the racing on track at Dover was some of the best that I've seen in recent years as well. Next Gen Car did well there, laid rubber down on the concrete. There was side-by-side racing, passing, comers and goers. Not the most passing I'll ever see in my entire life, but by Dover standards, I think that it was really good.
Yeah, and I hate when people kind of downgrade Dover because the track is so unique. It's the Monster Mile, and it lived up to its name this weekend, especially on Monday, because yes, there have been some snoozers, especially in the Cup Series of late at Dover. But you look at races like the Xfinity Series. What we saw on Saturday, like the battle between, I think it was Josh Berry and Justin Allgaier. There was a battle between Ty Gibbs and Noah Gragson. Like, that's good racing, no matter where it is. So I hate when it kind of gets nagged on for not being a good track, because we have seen really good Dover races in the past too. And I think Monday, Sunday, was the most recent iteration of one.
You saw that on Monday as well with Chase Elliott and Ross Chastain. Before caution came out, they were side by side battling for the lead for several laps. It wasn't even like 2 laps after the restart. It was like 5-6 laps after the restart.
Yeah, that was a fun battle. I mean, like you said, we were sitting next to each other, and I was on the edge of my seat for that battle, looking at the TV.
You gave out a couple, oh! I was like, relax, Dustin,
yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I'm known to do that. but yeah, really, really good battle for the lead there. I think Hamlin and Chase had a good battle earlier in the race, too. I mean, a lot of good battles at Dover.
Let's talk about Chase. He wins his first race of the year, his first race on an oval since Phoenix 2020 when he won the championship. And you told us this stat as we were kind of understanding the gravity of what just happened. Chase's first win on an oval twice. He's now won twice at Dover. Every other track that he's won at, it's either been a road course or it's been once on an oval. He kind of downplayed the fact that winning on an oval for the first time in so long was a big deal, and you know, Alan Gustafson said the same thing, that the media and the fans make a bigger deal out of it than it really is. Did you think that was a big deal at all, or do you think that it was something that was much ado about nothing?
I think it was much ado about nothing.
You can fall somewhere in the middle, because I kind of do.
I kind of fall in the middle, I guess, because you look at the success of his teammates over the last year and a half almost at this point, and, I mean, they've all won on ovals. Larson won 10 races last year. Granted, I think, three of them were on road courses. But a lot of those races last year – on ovals, Elliott had a top two or three, you know, finishing position and just couldn't get the job done at the end. So I think, you know, him getting into victory lane, him being the last Hendrick car to get into victory lane this year, although being the points leader too, like he's had a good year.
Right.
And he's got a 50-point lead. That's a quiet 50-point lead. Like, I don't think, you know, with the amount of top fives he has and laps led compared to everybody else, like, I don't think you would think he'd have that much of an advantage on second, but yeah, I mean, he's stout at Dover, man. He's got 9 top fives in 12 races there. So from his first race when he was battling for the win in 2016 with Kenseth and Larson, that was a hell of a race. And, you know, to yesterday, like the 12 races in between, they've been really good for him.
That's why I wasn't really worried about it. And I think that it was something to pay attention to in terms of not winning on an oval. But it's not like the sky was falling. I mean, he was leading the damn point standings. You know what I mean? Yep. And that's why I think he and Alan were potentially a little salty about all that talk, because it's one thing to not be running well. It's another thing to be running well and just not getting the finishes and not being able to close races on specific track types. I think it was more of that type of situation on ovals for the last 18 or so months than it was them not running well, period. Because they had race-winning speed, they just hadn't been able to close the deal. And Larson and Byron and Bowman, they had been.
Right, and just this year alone, like, Fontana comes to mind when he was battling. Was it for the lead with Larson when Larson put him in the wall?
Yeah, and then he got contact, and then he spun out. Quote,
yeah, and that was late in the race. Right. Martinsville comes to mind, like, a month ago.
Couldn't pass, but,
Once he got back in the field, it was hard to pass at all that night. Yeah. But, once he got back in the field, he couldn't.
I mean, those are two races right there where he had, if not the best car, one of the best cars.
Right, yeah, so I don't think there's much of a concern, or wasn't much of a concern. And, I mean, I think, you know, we're going to Darlington. He'll probably run okay there, but I would expect in the next month he'll probably get another win or two.
I would agree. How about Ricky Stenhouse Jr.? You talk about somebody that needed that run. I mean, man, he even told us after the race that they needed that bad. His words, not mine. Came into the race 31st in the point standings. He only gained a handful of spots, but even if he had won a race coming into Dover, he wouldn't have even been in the playoffs because he's not in the top 30. That's how dismal of a start to the year it's been for the number 47 group. They really needed that run, and I was surprised that they finished second. Wasn't surprised that they necessarily ran well. They ran better than I expected them to.
Yeah, including yesterday, he's only got 2 top 20 finishes all year long. And we're a third of the way through almost essentially now. So, you know, you got to start going at some point. Did gain 4 spots in the points yesterday. I didn't see that coming, even though he is historically really good on concrete tracks. And I asked him about that after the race yesterday. For whatever it is, he likes having, you know, little to no grip. And I think that dirt racing experience background helps him. Surprisingly at Dover, though, like that would help him of all places. And he's ran there well in the past, but not like yesterday. And had it gone longer and they caught more lap traffic, who knows? Maybe we would have had a different winner and a playoff. That would have been a real upset. Like that would have turned the playoff field upside down.
That would
down.
Have been a big upset.
Yeah.
Do you think it was the Mexican food?
It might have been the Mexican food.
Me, Dustin, Zach, and Andrew Curlin, Zach Sterniolo, also a former front stretcher. When it got rained out on Sunday night, we went and we got some Mexican food at a place called La Hacienda, which is about 10 minutes outside the track. So we walk in and it's, you know, cool vibe. And Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is having dinner with his team. His fiance, Todd Gillen, and his fiance were there too. So after the race, after we finished interviewing him, you know, we were like, so what'd you get for dinner last night? He's like, oh, I got some enchiladas. And I was like, yep, good man. And then I went back to do my work. So I think it was the green sauce on those enchiladas. It was pretty good.
Very well could have been. The food was very, very good.
They had this infant burrito. Not infant burrito.
That was
they
the
had
nickname.
A burrito that was infant size that was $25, and I really wanted to split it with Dustin, but he didn't want to.
Yeah, we didn't know, you know, we can't confirm it was infant size, but we were told by the waiter that it was infant sized.
Yeah, but you didn't listen to the waiter because he suggested the corn cake and you just got grilled corn.
Yeah, it is what it is.
I'm just still upset with you for that. All right, back on track. Anything else stand out to you specifically from Dover besides the racing products, Stenhouse, Chase Elliott? I think for me, it's still that Ford is struggling. I mean, even though RFK won a pole with Buescher, which was a bit surprising, and he was their highest finishing driver, Ford overall, top to bottom. Penske did not have a good day. Stuart Haas didn't really either. RFK leading the charge, that's when you may know you may be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, Penske had a terrible day. Like, I know Blaney won the second stage, and that was a strategy call with a late caution at the end of the second stage.
And Cindric's not going to finish last every week, but still.
Right. But he probably would have had maybe a top 20, but, yeah. I mean, yesterday was a game of attrition, too. In Logano, I mean, he was out to lunch all weekend long, finished 29th, and for a long time that was one of his better tracks. I heard on the Teardown, I'm sure you listened to it too, with Jeff Gluck and Jordan Bianchi, that since Daytona, Ford has 8 top 5 finishes. 8.
Oof.
Out of a possible 50.
That ain't good.
So that is not good. And I mean, Chris Buescher had a banner weekend for them. He led 18 laps, won the pole, like you said, his first pole in NASCAR. But at the same time, like Brad Keselowski was hit or miss. He was good at – it looked like he had a really good short-run car, and then as the long run progressed, he was out to lunch. So, yeah, I don't know where things stand with Ford right now. I think Harvick's getting better. I think he's getting acclimated to the car.
Yeah.
But it's a learning curve. Everyone's got a learning curve this year.
Just real quick, we also should talk about Ross Chastain and Martin Truex Jr., yeah. The last lap incident that they had. Where do you think they're going fishing together this week?
Somewhere in Darlington.
Probably, right? What would you think of that? Do you think that one driver was particularly at fault?
I mean, no, not really. Chastain's, you know, everyone knows he's aggressive. And Truex had complained on the radio a couple times during the race of how he was getting arrow blocked, kind of what we saw at Kansas that comes to mind with Logano.
Chastain's particularly aggressive, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think Martin Truex Jr. is particularly non-aggressive on the track.
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of times in the past where he said, you know, like Logano, the 2018 incident at Martinsville.
He doesn't
do
anything about it.
Yeah, he won the battle, but he's not going to win the war. And then
well,
comes.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, Logano won the championship. And Truex had a shot to take him out or at least pass him, race him hard at Homestead. So.
And that's not a bad thing. I want to be clear, too. Like, Martin is a very clean race car driver, and that's made him a lot of friends on the racetrack. But at certain points, like the Joey incident when he won that title, you know, racing him too clean, especially the next week at Homestead, if you race him a little bit harder and did what did to him, what he got done to him, who's to say what would have happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if Joey doesn't win that race, he's not even in the championship race. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. They're racing hard all day. We like hard racing, especially the next-gen car. You guys can beat and bang on each other. So, yeah, I have no issue with it. It kind of sucks for Truex because it cost him 8 positions and finished 12th. But it is what it is. I'm sure they'll get over it by this week.
Stick around, Dustin. Got to get a quick break out the way, but we're going to come back and talk to Drew Blickensderfer, the man with the longest last name sitting atop the pit box. Let's throw it over to our chat with the crew chief of the number 10 Stuart Haas Racing Ford. It is Drew Blickensderfer. It's not the first time he's worked with Eric Almirola, but it is the first time he's working with AA at Stuart Haas Racing. We asked him about that gelling process and if there's been any growing pains, so to speak, plus their 19th place finish at Dover this past weekend, why it wasn't really indicative of their speed, and why they're excited to get to Darlington this upcoming weekend. Plus, we chat a little bit about the crew chief suspensions that are coming in left, right, and center for those wheels falling off. How does he handle that as a crew chief and as a leader of a race team and that organization? Without further ado, here is our chat with Drew Blickensderfer of Stuart Haas Racing. Pleasure to welcome on to the show this week after a rainout where technological demons have wreaked havoc on his laptop, but he is joining us on his cell phone. It's the crew chief of the number 10 Stuart Haas Racing Ford, Drew Blickensderfer. Man, you said you'd like to blame a rainout, but it's probably just another Tuesday. I don't know what the deal is, Drew.
It is next-gen car, new work. Everything has me pretty full these weekends. My golf game is suffering, that's for sure.
Are you a technologically savvy guy, or are you like a grandpa that really is behind the times?
I would say I'm above average. Above average. I'm not terrible. I'm smart enough to know when there's something going on I don't understand. I go the IT guy, right? So I don't try to fix it or just break it myself. But I'm a little above average, I would say.
I feel like if you're a Cup Series crew chief, you're smart enough to be able to work computers. So I don't think the Zoom issue was your fault.
You should.
I think it was Zoom messing up.
That's right. I run my own simulation. I do all that stuff. So yes. I can push a few buttons, and it wasn't working the way it should have been working.
Yeah, not your fault. That's Zoom's fault. Let's get to this race that we had this weekend into the early parts of this week at Dover Motor Speedway. 19th yep. place finish for you and Eric at the Monster Mile. I know that was his potential final time there, and it was your first time there with SHR, your first time there with Eric. 19th, obviously not what you guys wanted. How did you see the weekend going from your perspective?
So we got a little behind the eight ball. We were really bad on Saturday in practice. We had tried a couple things with our car. It wasn't what we wanted, and we couldn't get it out of it quick enough before qualifying, so we took a hit in qualifying. We were 90% sure what we needed to do to fix the car, and that was allowed in the impound adjustments. So we did that. We started the race on Sunday, and he was super happy with the car. All the problems we had filling out of the racetrack, not enough grip, they went away, could get in the corner good. Just a little tight center off, but thought we were going to be really good on Sunday. And then the rain came. We stayed out, took a little track position call. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I thought, and Eric even commented earlier in our driver debrief with the rest of the teams, we probably should have run between 7th and about 12th. We had one green flag run there towards the end where we were all coming to green flag pit stops. We had started falling off harder than we had earlier in the race, and he said the right front lost all grip. I got nervous. I had seen a couple tire issues earlier.
Yeah.
We were within 5 laps of pitting under green anyway, the whole field was. So I said, pit now. Pit now, let's get tires on it. Let's make sure we don't blow our right front and hurt a race car worse. Right. That'll be way worse than if we pit a little early. It's not going to hurt us. We pitted as we're leaving pit road. The 16's wheel came off, got us caught 2 laps down. We got one of them back, and then we rode pretty much in the lucky dog spot the last 60 laps of the race, never getting a caution to kind of get us back on the lead lap. We passed back up to about 12th or 13th in running order from the back of the pack, a lap down. So I think we took a car that could compete between 7th and probably 12th and finished, unfortunately, 19th, getting stuck on pit road at the end of the race. But we made big improvements from Saturday, and I think that's kind of where our program is. And you see a lot of Fords right now. We're kind of right around that 10th place is a lot for us right now in race trim. And we're trying to maximize our potential a little bit because that's what we need to beat the Hendrick cars for sure and most of the Chevrolets. Is just a little more potential in our vehicle.
And it's still early in the season to a certain extent. I mean, 11 races in, and it's still early in you and Eric's relationship as well. Yeah. How do you think that you guys have gelled so far, and do you think that you're about where you expected to be at this point?
I think it's good. You know, I worked with him when he drove the 43. Mm-hmm. So Eric and I think have a good relationship. There are little things that still creep up. When Eric says stuff on the radio, how his excitement level, right? That's kind of how you judge how loose, how tight, how much does the right front feel like it's gone. That excitement level with Eric versus other drivers, where do you, you know, you have to learn how to kind of read your guy when he's saying that stuff. So I think some of that stuff still creeps up that we're still new, you know, but everything else as SHR feels like home. You know, sitting here in your office next to Rodney Childers and next to Mike Shiplett, next to Johnny Klausmeier, right down the hall from Zipadelli and Rex and Mike Bogoravich and David Hyder was just in here that I had to kick out to give you a call. Having all those guys around every single day, Tony Gibson, constantly texting, talking to us, that it feels like home already with all of that. And the team on the 10 feels like home. But there's still every now and then there's a bug that creeps in there that keeps us from being our best. But I would say we're close to where we need to be as a group, and our relationship's really good. We text a lot. We talk a lot. I say probably once a week to him, you sure we can't change your mind and keep you around a little longer? because we're having a pretty decent time trying to figure out this next gen car out and going to the racetrack week in and week out with each other.
Yeah, you guys had a blazing start to the season, had a top 10, and I think the first three or four races in a row. And, I mean, a lot of people may look on paper and say, well, Eric's got 25 races to go. Start counting them down. But knowing you, knowing Eric, knowing kind of how the organization works from the outside, I would assume that you guys aren't looking at it as, all right, 25 to go, 24 to go. You're looking at, all right, one more week to try to get that win, to try to improve on our craft, to try to get into the playoffs. And even though this is Eric's last scheduled full-time year, I assume you guys aren't necessarily going into each week saying, oh, this is the last time here, this is the last time there. You guys are really focused on the task at hand.
100%. And I've talked to Eric a little bit about this, kind of just the way he feels getting in the race car every single week. And you can kind of tell this is a high-pressure sport. Like what we do on Sundays is high-pressure. We're top-level American auto racing. There's a lot of pressure there. Before, for Eric, there was a lot of pressure with sponsorship and this and that. And he can kind of let that part of it go. But then the pressure just redirects. How are we going to perform better? You know, it's just you still feel a certain amount of pressure no matter what on Sunday. And I told him this morning after yesterday when I thought we should have run 10th or better, to be able to come back to Darlington, a racetrack he runs well at, we're excited about. I feel like I can't wait to get there on Saturday and get back on the racetrack to kind of put last week behind us, because we kind of let one slip away. We probably let 10 or so points get out of our grasp that could be useful here in 10 or so weeks. So hopefully we get to Darlington and we run at least as well as we did at Dover, and we can capitalize a little better.
We've been seeing the loose wheels and the wheels falling off as a recurring theme this year. In Dover, we didn't have it happen once. We had it happen twice. That obviously comes with a suspension for 4 weeks for a couple crew members and yourself, the crew chief. Hasn't happened to you guys yet, which thankfully, let's try to keep it that way. Knocking on wood here. But as a crew chief, you obviously are balancing a lot of different things during the race. You're balancing a lot of different things during the pit stop. Is there anything that you can do, whether it's telling your team how to perform a certain way, or is that one of those things where if it happens, it happens, and it's going to suck if it does, but so be it?
You're close. We talked about it today. We don't see much anything wrong the 11 did in that. And on top of the box, you know, Chris had nothing to do with it. Right. Zero. Yes, you can tell your guys, make sure you check off, be extra careful. Here's the thing. We're doing pit stops in 9.5 to 11 seconds now. Checking off and doing a lot of extra things to make it cautious, you're losing 5 or 7 spots on pit road.
Right.
You're never passing 7 cars on a green flag run at Dover, ever this time. Like, it's follow the leader on the racetrack. If you come out 10th, you got a good chance of keeping 10th, whether you take 2 tires or no tires. We saw that, you know. So everything's made on pit road for the most part and on restarts. Checking off and adding a couple seconds each side of the car is not something that's going to be very productive in a performance. It's unfortunate, right? Like, I feel the penalty is super harsh, and it's tough, right? Like, I understand there's nothing more dangerous. Well, very few things more dangerous than a bouncing wheel and tire in the middle of that. When I saw the 16's wheel go in the middle of the racetrack at Dover, I was saying, throw the caution, because if that thing gets hit and it goes into the grandstands, we got a lot of problems. Look, it hurt me. I was on pit road leaving, and I knew that caution had to come out because it looked really bad. So I understand why the penalty is so harsh. We don't want that to happen under any circumstances. But the poor guys that it's happening to, I don't know. There's a lot of times I feel they are kind of at the mercy of some things that they didn't realize what was going on. So it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot on both sides of the fence, NASCARs and the teams. Hopefully we get better and better with the one lug nut and we see less and less of it. I thought it was maybe kind of going away a little bit there, and we saw it back at Dover. So hopefully we can put an end to it, and hopefully it doesn't bite anybody over here at SHR.
We mentioned simulation a little bit earlier. Ryan Preece has been a new addition to the organization this year, as have you, and it seems like he's been really instrumental for all four Cup teams as well as the Xfinity program and Ford Performance as a whole in terms of manufacturing simulation data and trying to make sure that you guys have the information that you need when you get to the racetrack. I know you haven't necessarily worked directly with him, but he was at the racetrack this weekend for Rick Ware Racing. He's got a handful of Cup starts later this year. Have you seen him develop in his new role with SHR, and how valuable do you think he is to your guys' race team?
Well, it's valuable having a guy who's got a few years of Cup experience under his belt to come in there. And look, Ryan's won at every form of racing he's done, except on Sunday. So he's got experience. He knows what winning race cars should feel like. Mm-hmm. And having a guy that, you know, not every, you know, Wednesday is our sim time at Ford. Not every Wednesday Harvick or Briscoe or Custer or Almirola can make it. They've got obligations, whether it be family or whether it be sponsor related. So to have a guy be able to fill in, and he's done it for us on the 10. Hey Ryan, Eric can't go to our Phoenix sim session. Can you show up? He comes and he runs our model, and he can give feedback. And we can kind of get a baseline of Eric likes this versus Ryan, or just run the car to see if it doesn't do anything silly, if it's not bouncing off shocks, it's not bottoming out. Run it and see what you feel like, because he's driven both Kevin's sim car, our sim car. What's it feel like compared to these guys? And it gets more information that way to the whole group being able to do that. He also helps making the sim laps. So our simulation is run off of a sim lap based off the driver simulator. So we're simming on sim right there. And Ryan's making the first lap, so we can run on our desktop simulation throughout the week. So Ryan's doing a lot to help out not only himself being in a good organization and being able to run cars with input from Stuart Haas Racing, but he's helping us out on the return of being there when our drivers can't, because not every week our drivers with their busy schedules can be where we need them to try to get the most data. And he fills in that role. He's in all of our debrief meetings. He's getting all that information. He's kind of collecting this data as well. So he's a good guy to talk to. He's an easy guy to sit down and have a conversation pre and post race with and kind of see what he thinks about what's going on with the race cars that he's driving of Stuart Haas's.
Chevrolet definitely is probably at the top of the top right now, as well as Hendrick. You guys mentioned that. SHR, they got some work to do. Ford has some work to do. I'm sure that you guys would be among the first to admit that. Besides raw speed, which encompasses a lot, I recognize that. What else do you guys think you need to work on? Is there any specific area with this next-gen car that has been a little bit more of an adjustment period than you imagine? And is there any specific thing that you guys are trying to focus on to try to get that race-winning speed back on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I just think it's a lot of different things. You know, it's just the tech process, even. The tech process, when you get store-bought parts, you assemble your race car, you take them to tech, you don't necessarily pass tech with the parts that you bought. Mm-hmm. And so that being said, you have to, like, try to get your manufacturing to figure out, okay, when we put these panels on, this is how you have to do it to make sure we pass. Call NASCAR, say this is how we're doing it. This is what you see. Make sure everything's right. So as we've seen, you want to make sure you're in line. How do you pass tech? And also, how do you pass tech with the most performance in your race car? So it's just different than it's always been. Before, you made the panels. You did this. You did that. Right. And you went there. You, you try to be it through tech. Now you're buying store-bought parts, you're rerunning them, you're not rerunning them, what are we doing? So it's just getting your head wrapped around the new Monday through Thursday manufacturing process. And then at the same time, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, put the most performance you can into that race car. It's not completely different than what we used to do. It's just different areas of focus are kind of being redirected. Sure. To make sure you get both the most performance. And like you said, we understand that we need a little more potential in our vehicles as a group at SHR and I think as a group at Ford. How are we going to do that? Stay in line doing that and keep showing up to the racetrack every single week. We can't take a week off to try to get it. So we need to show up and keep doing that. So there's always a movement. And I think, you know, through February, through March, through April, we're getting closer. You know, I think now that we're into May, we're getting to some more mile and a half type racetracks. We haven't been there in a while. There's going to be some things that creep up that we didn't think about, or we're way better than Vegas when we raced them a couple months ago. So for sure, there's just other areas to get your head wrapped around that are kind of not what you're used to. But to be honest, it's just as invigorating because it's the same, you know, it's just a different puzzle we're trying to put together than we've had in the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys aren't alone. As you know, you got a lot of good minds in that building and tangentially related to help you through that process. Last thing for me, you know, you guys are 11th in points right now. There's winners that keep on winning, new winners. There's some repeat winners as well. And there's been a lot of chatter about whether or not the Cup Series will get to that 16 winner mark. I think that is not going to happen. That's my personal opinion. I see your smile in there. Do you think that you guys are going to need to win a race to get into the playoffs this year? Or do you think that you're in a position where if things should go your way and the performance improves like you guys are banking on, pointing your way in is not unrealistic?
I think pointing our way in is not unrealistic. That being said, I don't look at it that much. Yes, I want to be as high in the points as I can possibly be, because that means our team is consistent and we're putting good race cars on the racetrack week in and week out. But we're trying to win races. I mean, at this point of the season, you're trying to win. I'm trying to win at Darlington. I tried to win last week at Dover. Not once yet has it crossed my mind, well, that's the guy I'm racing in points. Let's see if we can get ahead of him or get one more stage point than the four who's next to us in points. I'm not there yet. And I don't know if I'll be there for a while. We're still trying to win races. You know, you win, it takes care of itself. If this is the year, it wouldn't surprise me, right? Like, I think before a year ago when I was having the same conversation about Michael McDowell's not technically guaranteed a playoff right. spot if we have 16, I kind of laughed that one off. We're not getting to 16 last year. The way it is this year, you've seen Trackhouse on the roll. Daniel Suarez winning a race is not out of the picture. Tyler Reddick winning a race. Austin Dillon. Some of these guys that are going to be on that border of 16th through 20th in points, those guys winning races are not out of the question at all. And I think you're going to see a flow in the season where right now those Chevrolets and those Trackhouse cars are really, really good. Yeah. Hopefully in the next month or so, maybe we're saying the same thing about all the Ford camp. And you've got all the Penske guys with the Wood brothers, the Roush guys, us up there, or the Toyota guys, right? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they go on a run where all of those guys are competing. So, I think you're going to see flow because people are going to hit on things quicker than others or slower than others throughout this season. And it might lead to a couple months of really good running for a certain organization or manufacturer.
I know you mentioned you were with Eric before at RPM. You got Smithfield still on board with you guys now. How much bacon do you have on a weekly basis, would you say?
More than I should. I'm trying to eat healthier. I went about 3 months of eating a lot of bacon to start this job, and I'm like, all right, I need to get back in the routine of eating healthier. But it's still a couple times a week at least.
Well, you got IHOP on the car too some weeks, so pancakes taste good too.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I need to eat healthier, and everything we have that's available to us is doing the opposite to me right now. So I need to get on board.
Yeah, I know you said you're excited for Darlington this weekend. You got a cool throwback on the car as well. In terms of getting around that racetrack, it's not a 500 miler by any means, but 400 is still no cakewalk around the track, too tough to tame. What do you need to adjust on throughout the race usually, and do you think that's going to be the same this week with the next-gen car?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same. The thing about Darlington is it wears tires out, and when it wears tires out, you get really free. You lose a lot of grip in the rear of the car. So much speed can be made up off of turn two down the backstretch to set up a slide job or to set up a slide in front of somebody that I think you know, getting over that patch. We've got cars now that struggle with bottoming out and being, you know, we see it when you get flat tires and they can't move. There's a rough ride in our cars with the small sidewalls and low to the ground as we can get them. Getting across that patch and those bumps off of turn two are going to be extremely important on Saturday and making sure that's worked out in your car. And then you're going to be fighting for a rear grip as you go. They're going to get freer and freer as you go. The other thing is we've seen toe links be a problem on these cars when you slap the wall. And there's going to be a lot of guys slapping the wall at Darlington. So yeah. Trying to keep your driver focused, stay a little off that wall. Don't use it up if you don't need it. Don't be trying to set lap records to lap 20 of this thing, because we need it for closer to lap 200. So
right.
Those are the things you're going to have to be mindful of.
Definitely. Well, Drew, it's always great to chat with you a little bit. I appreciate your time on a busy week for you and a shorter week for you. Save me some bacon and pancakes. I'll be down there soon.
It sounds good. You're welcome, and take care.
Checkered Flag is out on the podcast this week. Want to give a big thank you to not only Drew, but also to Dakota Hunter of True Speed Communications and Stewart Haas Racing for helping coordinate that conversation. Always great working with Drew. Always great working with Dakota. So appreciate you gentlemen, and good luck this weekend at Darlington. Let's talk about the track Too Tough to Tame, the Lady in Black Darlington Raceway for Throwback Weekend. Besides the fact that it's Throwback Weekend, I think the name of the race is just great. It's like quintessential NASCAR, the Goodyear 400. You know what I mean? Good old NASCAR sponsor. It's a quick race name. It's brand recognition. I think that's one of the best race names I've heard.
Yeah, I agree. It's very kind of old school. The tires should look old school this week with probably the white lettering. I'm excited for Darlington. First time going down there in person. It's an historic venue, so I'm excited to check it out.
Gone are the days of the Big Machine Vodka presents the Brickyard 400 at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, presented by insert veteran's name here.
That's a mouthful.
Or the Monaco Cocktails Gateway Classic 125, presented by the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame at Worldwide Technology Raceway Gateway for the NASCAR K&M Pro Series East and West.
Was that
real
thing,
by the way? It's real.
Oh my God.
I promise you. It was a K&N East and West combo race. I think 2018 or 19, Derek Krause won. But since I was doing stuff for NASCAR, I had to type it out every single time. And it was the longest thing in the history of mankind.
Copy, awesome. Paste.
Yep. Control C, Control V. That's what we do best. I've been to Darlington once. I actually went as a fan with my dad for the first annual Throwback Weekend. That was a really cool experience.
15.
And it was before the Throwback Weekend was kind of a thing. Never been as a media member, but I'm sure that there's a lot of things to do down there from a media perspective. Are you going to be in that turn four press box? Is that where it is?
I think it's in the middle of three and four. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, from videos location. I've seen and pictures I've seen, it looks like a nice, it almost looks similar to Dover in terms of being in, you know, the middle of a corner.
Yeah.
And not, you know, where typically it would be above the front stretch. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how the view is and how the racing is. I'm sure the racing will be great. Darlington's one of the best tracks on the circuit.
Well, like Drew Blickensderfer just told us on the show, he expects things to be pretty similar, even though the next-gen car is new and there's a lot of things to learn. He's expecting tire wear to be similar to the previous iteration car, for the fall-off to be similar, and for most things that accompany Darlington Raceway to be a pretty status quo race when it comes to that racetrack. So even though the next-gen car has thrown a wrench into a lot of different things, he's expecting things to be pretty similar. Do you think that we'll see that as well?
I do. And because of that, I think a lot of the guys that run up front there, like your Denny Hamlins, Larson, Kyle Larson has three straight runner-up finishes there dating back to 2019.
Look at that stat.
Yeah. And Denny, I mean, Denny's super consistent there. Harvick
delivers at Darlington.
He does deliver at Darlington. Harvick sled. I was doing a piece today for NASCAR.com for this week, and Harvick's led 749 of his 812 laps at Darlington since joining Stewart Haas and hasn't finished outside the top 10. So
yeah.
I would expect him to run well this weekend. So I think your occasional front runners that we see at Darlington, maybe a Ross Chastain who finished third there in the fall, mm-hmm. Will be your guys to beat this weekend.
I didn't know he finished third there in the fall. That's surprising.
He did finish third. He was behind Hamlin and Larson, which was That was an epic battle at the end when Larson ran the fence on the last
right.
lap.
I remember that now because I remember they were trying to wreck each other, and I was like, who's in third? Oh, my God. And it was almost the Melon Man. That would have been crazy. Yeah, I expect him to run well this weekend, too, because it's one thing to know what the veterans do well, and we know that they do well there, but you also got to look at the present moment. And right now, there may not be a hotter driver on the circuit than Ross.
Hey, he's got 7 top fives in the last 9 races, and 2 of those are wins. He's running he's running well everywhere, and really Trackhouse as a whole has a lot of speed. So, yeah, I would expect the one car especially to be up front contending for the win.
I know you spend a lot of your time at J-Ski uploading paint scheme pictures and making sure that they're all linked correctly. I know you do. So you know almost probably all the throwbacks that we have this weekend across all 3 national series. Do you have a favorite for 2022?
For all 3 series?
Yeah.
Oof. I don't know about for all 3 series. If we're going just Cup specifically, I don't know if you saw the ones Trackhouse just released, the 98 Japan ones that Dale Earnhardt Dale Sr. raced.
Keep vamping. I'm looking them up.
Yeah. So they competed in an exhibition race in Japan with them, and they're sponsored by Coca-Cola and have the polar bear on it. It looks incredible. There's a couple good ones. It's different, though, right? Because they're not identical to that paint scheme because the number's forward. But I don't have an issue with that, really. I think the number.
I like these. The number font and everything.
Yeah, it looks identical.
That's good.
And Trackhouse, I mean, there's some teams that haven't missed at all with paint schemes this year, and Trackhouse is one of them.
Yeah, I think Kyle Sykes is the designer there. I don't, like, pretend to know him personally or anything, but, like, that dude's good. He's real good. Those GoPro schemes at Martinsville, whew, boy. Those are nice.
That was a nice shade of blue, both of them.
They were.
Then there's some couple of, like, lame's not the right word, but, like, Denny Hamlin's throwing it back to 6 years ago when he won the 500.
Yeah.
Christopher Bell's throwing it back to when he won the championship with Kyle Busch Motorsports in the Truck Series. Like,
Series
those are
XM.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of those ones, but there's a lot of nice ones in the field for sure.
I love the Series XM paint schemes. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I understand the bias there.
Yes. I like Josh Berry's number 8 car in the Xfinity
Looney
Series
Tunes.
As well. Looney Tunes, that orange. It's rare that you see like a lot of orange on a race car. So anytime we can throw it back and have some Looney Tunes action, I'm all for it.
Yeah, as you can see, I'm a big orange guy.
Huge.
but yeah, he says that one looks really nice up close, so I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah. Do you think that Throwback Weekend still has as much intrigue and whatnot as it first did when it started, or do you think that it's kind of overstayed its welcome, so to speak?
I don't think it's overstayed its welcome, but I don't think it's as big a deal as it was 7 years ago when you first went in 2015. I think part of that's because back then, like, we broke them into eras, and you would have paint schemes from, like, the 70s or the 80s or the 90s or whatever, and now it's all over the place. And like I said, we're throwing it back to the same driver from 5 years ago. Like, that's not really a throwback paint scheme, you know? Right. So, I don't know. I like throwback. I like everything that comes with it, with the weekend. So, I'm excited to be there in person and see, you know, what it's like up close and personal.
Yeah, I'm jealous you're going to be there. I wish I could, but I will be manning the controls for Sirius XM. So, if you're listening on the radio and you hear a commercial break, I press that button. Just don't forget it, people. A little bit more on Darlington specifically. You know, I think that this is probably one of two tracks that is the proper host for a throwback weekend. I wouldn't hate it if they maybe rotated it between Darlington and Martinsville every other year or something like that, just because Martinsville being one of the – it's not one of. It is the oldest track in NASCAR on short track, beating and banging action. I feel like that could be good to maybe even spice the weekend up a little bit if the parties involved believe that spicing up needs to happen.
Yeah, when you said – two tracks, I was thinking about what's the other one, and Martinsville is the only other one that it could possibly
be. Yeah,
because like you said, that's been on the schedule since NASCAR was created, you know, over
oldest
70 years
track
ago
on the circuit. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be cool, kind of rotating them, but I think Darlington's taken to this well over the last 8 years, and it's something, you know, fresh, maybe not as fresh as it was, but it's something different that we don't see every week.
Yeah,
I'm also glad though that it's not, how do I word this? The Southern 500's the throwback race. I'm putting that in quotes because, you know, they moved the Southern 500 out of Darlington only to bring it back. So it seems fitting that that would be throwback weekend, but I understand why the playoffs, you know, with it being the first playoff race, that you'd want it to be the other race throwback weekend.
Yeah, I'm glad that the Southern 500 is not the throwback weekend, because even though you're right, like when you think of an old throwback type race, it's a Southern 500. It's not Daytona. Mm-hmm. It's not the Brickyard. It's not Bristol, whatever.
Right.
But besides the fact that that's the playoff opener, it's also a crown jewel.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want to commingle all these different things between it being the playoff opener, a crown jewel, throwback weekend, one of the only, or should be only, 500-mile races. There's too much going on there. So I think the fact that you go to Darlington multiple times in the year is great. And I think that having the Southern 500 being a crown jewel to open up the playoffs, even that, for me, is pushing it in terms of all the different things going on. If you added throwback weekend to that too, there'd be too much at once. So I think that they have it good where it's at.
I agree wholeheartedly. So, yeah, it should be a fun weekend with all the different schemes.
Dustin Lakes, make the people some money. Gamble responsibly if you shall, courtesy of our friends at Caesars Sportsbook in association with William Hill. There are no driver matchups posted as the time of this current recording because it's been less than 24 hours since the checkered flag flew at Dover. So as we have done in the past, we're going to do an audible and do some off-the-dome driver matchups. Head-to-head, who finishes higher? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Kevin Harvick versus Chase Briscoe.
Kevin Harvick.
That's that. What'd you say? He hasn't finished outside the top 10 since joining SHR?
11 straight top 10s at the track, yep.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Kevin right there. How about Christopher Bell versus Martin Truex Jr.?
Truex. He's got a few wins there. I think the 19.
I'll go Truex as well. How about KFB versus Kurt Busch?
Kyle.
Chris Buescher versus Brad Keselowski?
It's a tough one. Keselowski.
I'll go with Chris because I think he's going to ride that momentum from Dover. I always like to look at the back side of the garage and some of the back markers and do some matchups there. BJ McLeod or Cody Ware?
McLeod.
The battle for 35th.
Yeah.
No,
I think
disrespect.
It's
just what it is.
Yeah, I just think whoever doesn't have a DNF, I think, wins that one.
I think a race like this, experience pays, and BJ is more experienced than Cody, and he's able to maneuver around the leaders a little bit better, so I'd go with BJ on that. How about Todd Gillen versus Harrison Burton, two drivers that need a solid run, but Darlington is pretty tough.
That's a tough one. That might be the toughest one you've said.
Why, thank you.
I'll go Harrison Burton. He ran decent there in Xfinity.
Yeah, I'll go with Burton as well. He's got better equipment, obviously. I know that he hasn't really showed it so far this year, but I'll roll with him. How about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. versus Eric Almirola?
Almirola. He runs decent these types of tracks.
You don't think Ricky can carry that mojo?
I look at the full season. He's got two top 20s, and I'm not buying that.
Okay, you got to promise me, though, if you go to a Mexican restaurant on Saturday night and Ricky's at the same place, you got to let me know because I got to gamble on him.
He's going to run second.
Yeah, he's got to run second. I'll bet the house on him finishing second if there's a prop or something like that.
Sounds like a deal.
All right, who is your pick to win the Goodyear 400? I'll give you mine while you finish your thought there. I'm going to go with Kyle Larson because I did not know that he has finished runner-up three straight times. You are the man with the stats at jski.com, and you did my research for me. I think it'd be foolish to not even think about picking Kyle Larson, so I'm going to roll with the five.
I'm good at that with the stats. I do think Larson's going to probably dominate the race, but I'll go Chastain to be a little different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Win of the year for Ross the Boss.
It's took a little bit of time, but I'm bought into the one team now. I mean, it can only happen since that you finished in the top five so many times with it not being a weekly occurrence. So I think Ross wins.
So, like, is there a throwback watermelon or something? How does that work?
I don't know.
We can, like, GMO a watermelon from, like, the 50s or something. I don't know. Maybe they'll just have a usual watermelon and it'll be boring.
Probably so. It's not boring, but...
Definitely not boring. I have a mini watermelon over there in my kitchen, but he's got a big old thing that he keeps in the hauler.
Yeah, he's huge watermelon.
Huge. And they make sure to replace it every few weeks or something like that if it's rotting or going bad, because if he's going to smash it, it needs to smash properly. We learned this.
And the first two times he smashed, at least in the cup level, it smashed properly.
Oh, yes, for sure. Well, Dustin, thank you for hopping back on your show that you have built over the years. I appreciate you carving out some time. I appreciate you paving the way for folks like me. And it was good to see you this weekend at Dover. Hope you enjoyed your hibachi. Hope you enjoyed your burrito bowl.
Yeah, I ate really well this weekend, and I need to work out now because of it. Like, a lot. Extra workout in the gym every day.
You and me both. All right, let's sign off and go pump some iron. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Stretch Podcast. If you guys like what you heard here today, please do us a favor and leave a rating and a review. You can do that on Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. We should be available for your consumption there. And if we're not, drop us a line on Twitter at Front Stretch, and we will try to rectify that issue for you. For everybody else here at Front Stretch, thank you to Drew Blickensterfer. Thank you to Dustin Albino, our wonderful Front Stretch alum. And we will catch you on the flip side, where we will talk about Throwback Weekend from Darlington Raceway. Be good, party people.